This treaty will assure us peace for 100 years. We'll be strong, invincible.
Yes, I can see the many advantages.
Nathan slowly sat back in his chair. His face was heavily lined from lack of sleep, but his voice was still strong.
A mutual defense pact is a clever idea. I don't know if it has ever been done before. If somebody attacks Casanova, Bull Run and Front Royal come to their aid, and then each does the same. Combining our strengths would make this triad of baronies absolute rulers of the entire Shen area, from the ocean to the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Exactly.
Nathan pulled a chart closer, then tossed it into the middle of the table.
However, it will never work. Muti attacks never last for longer than a few hours, and there hasn't been a cold-heart mob large enough to threaten the Ville for years.
True, but...
Besides, it takes a day for horses to ride from one Ville to the next, and nobody has enough to mount troops. On foot, the Villes are several days apart. 30 miles is no small distance to cover. Fuel is more scarce every year, and we constantly cannibalize the broken wags to keep the remaining few operating. Plus, how can we communicate with one another? Even our most powerful radios won't reach more than a mile because of the nuke crash in the air, and batteries grow weaker each year. Riders would take too long and are easily stopped.
Nathan ticked off the items on his fingers.
We can't communicate with one another, and rescue troops would take too long to ever arrive in time to help. Unifying the baronies is a masterful idea, brilliant, but it will never work.
The attending Sekman coughed and shuffled their boots, waiting for an outcome to the discussion. This was baron talk, and not really their concern, until one of the men drew a weapon and the expected bloodbath began. None of them could understand why their leaders had waited this long to chill the other man.
Oh, I have a way.
Good. How?
Suddenly, the sound of blaster fire erupted outside, and people began to shout.
Are we being attacked?
Overton strode to the window. Privately, he raged over the incompetence of the fools. They weren't supposed to attack the Ville until they got his signal. The Baron glanced down, but could only see the courtyard below and a thin slice of the moat around the fortress.
I don't hear the alarm bell.
Nathan rose wearily from the chair to head to another window. The Sekman there made way for him, and the Baron leaned out as far as the iron bars would allow. On the main road to the walled Ville, a lone wag was drawing near. The pre-dark vehicle was surrounded by people waving their arms and faintly shouting, but at that distance it was only noise. More and more people joined the mob around the wag, some of them firing their blasters into the air in celebration.
What the hell is going on?
Overton unsnapped the flap of his covered holster, the butt of his Desert Eagle jutting backward from the holster. It was a seemingly ridiculous thing to do with a blaster, but Nathan had seen the man cross-draw with either hand equally fast and knew the truth of the matter. Overton was a gunner, and a bastard good one. Perhaps even as good as he thought he was.
We have important guests.
Nathan tried to suppress a smile. The cries of the crowd were finally becoming discernible, and mixed in with the general hurrahs was a single word. A name, actually. Overton stiffened as he finally caught the name the crowd was shouting, and he slammed men aside as he rushed from the war room with blaster in hand. The flatbed truck stopped at the foot of the drawbridge, the cheering throng so thick that Ryan couldn't drive any closer. Endlessly, the dancing people waved their hands in the air and chanted his name. Killing the engine, Ryan stayed behind the wheel as the rest of the companions climbed from the rear of the truck. Everybody, that was, except Mildred and Christy, as they were still at the campsite. Christy's fever had finally broken, but the woman was much too weak to take into a potentially dangerous situation, so Mildred volunteered to stay and nurse her back to health. Besides, J.B. had added sagely, it never hurt to have a few folks in reserve when boldly walking into a viper's nest like Front Royal. The plan made sense, and Ryan agreed reluctantly.
They sure like you.
Clem stood at ease with the Enfield cradled in his arms.
Appears so.
Ryan beeped the horn to try to clear a path to the drawbridge. The noise only made the crowd shout louder and fire more blasters skyward. It was a triple stoop waste of ammo, and the chanting was starting to get on his nerves. This was why the one-eyed warrior hadn't even attempted to sneak into the Ville like their last visit. His scarred face was just too well known here.
I'd hoped all that crap about me arriving on a white horse and firing golden bullets would be forgotten by now.
Indeed no, sir.
Ock was basking in the attention and waving to the crowd with his sword stick.
Even in the best of times, people always need their mythic heroes. You are that to them. A new symbol of hope.
Horseshit.
Ryan pounded on the horn again. Graciously, Doc smiled.
Agreed, my dear Ryan. But still true, nonetheless.
Not everybody's delighted we're here.
JB tilted back his hat for a clearer field of vision. The Uzi was slung over a shoulder and dangled at his side, ready for instant use.
Spot them yet?
The blue shirts? Yeah, I got them zeroed.
Even before stopping the truck, Ryan noticed the gathering of the Sekhmen armed with AK-47 blasters. There were a lot of them. But he was also noticing other Sekhmen dressed in brown shirts, staying near the blue shirts. Wherever the blues went, the browns followed, and in greater numbers.
Nathan's troops?
Jack poked his head out the passenger's window. High in the cab, Ryan craned his neck for a better view.
Makes sense.
Sure gonna be easy to know who to chill if it comes to a fight.
Clem took a plug out and bit off a healthy chaw.
Can't see how it could end any other way. Doesn't take a doomy to know that.
Winner take all. Loser gets buried.
Exactly.
Still in the rear of the truck, Dean couldn't stop staring at the cheering people in the Golden Fortress. This was his heritage, his true home. Someday, if he wanted, he would be the Baron here. Now, wait a second. That was wrong, the boy corrected himself. His father had given up the title, and Nathan's children would rule the Ville. Dean wasn't quite sure if he was happy about missing that bullet of responsibility, or angry as hell about not getting the title and authority. It would require some serious thinking. Did he even want to be a Baron? Doc indicated a commotion near the drawbridge. People were going quiet as something pushed through them at a good clip.
Nathan?
Can't tell yet.
Ryan moved the carefully cut wooden stick closer to the gas pedal. If trouble came, he was going to jam the stick on the gas pedal, flooring the engine, and send the flatbed truck crashing into the fortress while Dean lit the fuse on the case of Molotovs. The rest of the companions would scatter into the crowd. They were ready to talk, fight, or escape. In growing silence, the crowd hastily parted, several folks almost going into the moat as they cleared away from a big man wearing a blue uniform.
That's him.
Clem rested a finger on the trigger of his blaster. Overton ran swiftly across the drawbridge, unbuckling his gun belt and dropping weapons every few yards. When he reached the shore, the would-be Baron was only wearing clothes. Siglider poised near a cloth fuse, Dean wondered what the man was doing. Suspecting the truth, Ryan unlocked the cab door as a precaution.
Salutations and greetings!
But the man went straight past Doc. Reaching the truck, Overton slammed a fist through the open window and directly into Ryan's face. The one-eyed man was caught by surprise, not by the attack, but by the speed of it. He managed to roll with the blow, but it still rattled him hard. Then combat reflexes flared, and he kicked open the door, slamming Overton to the ground. The big man landed sprawling, and Ryan climbed down with a hand on his blaster.
Get up!
Ryan drew his weapon. Slowly, Overton stood and threw dirt in Ryan's face. He instinctively fired twice, and the other men grabbed him in a bear hug. Powerful arms wrapped low around his back began to squeeze, trying to break his spine. Ryan headbutted his adversary twice before he finally let go. Then, before Overton could get clear, Ryan slammed his boot into the man's groin. Overton loudly grunted in pain, but didn't drop. He was either a eunuch or he was wearing padding, Ryan realized, leveling the Sig Sauer. But Overton kicked it away before he could fire. A red mist of rage took hold of Ryan, and he jabbed the flat of his hand into the other man's throat. Hacking for air, Overton turned sideways and kicked Ryan in the gut, slamming him against the side of the truck. Bouncing off the metal, Ryan drew his panga and started forward in a crouch.
Don't do it.
JB raised his empty hands in surrender. Forcing himself to heed JB's warning, Ryan slowly stood and sheathed his blade. Overton stood ready for combat, balanced on his boots, his knuckles cracked and oversized from a lot of brawling. Subtly, Ryan shifted his weight, and the other man altered his stance slightly to counter the move.
Who the hell are you?
Ryan's muscles tensed, ready for more combat.
Don't you recognize me?
No. Should I?